Hey guys, welcome to the Days in the Wild podcast, formerly Interviews with the Hunting Masters. Yep, we changed the name, but not the format, nothing like that. Everything's going to stay the same and try to keep it as streamlined as possible, bring you the same type of content. I'm open for suggestions, so if anybody wants to send me, drop me a line. You know, most of these podcasts come about from questions that are generated by you. So please keep those questions coming, and we'll get them answered. The official changeover will be April 1st. Put that on your calendar, please, April 1st, because you may need to go in and resubscribe to the show depending on the platform that you're in. So keep that in mind. Interviews with the Hunting Masters, it's on that URL now. It's going to change over Days in the Wild, and there is a slight possibility that you may need to resubscribe. So, April 1st, keep that in mind. So, before we roll into this next episode, I want to talk to you a little bit about conservation and some of the things that we can be doing out there. A woman actually asked me today, she's on Instagram, she was like, how... You know, I'm not trying to be sly or try to be whatever. She said, I just want to know what it is you get out of hunting. Why do you hunt? Educating the non-hunting public about why you do what you do, the benefits of hunting, talk to them about the North American model of conservation and the Pittman-Robinson Act, all that stuff. Educate yourself first, you know, so you don't sound like a dum-dum like I do often. And really, you know, arm yourself with the tools to educate people on the benefits and what we do and why. Because I can't tell you how many times I talk to people and they just automatically assume that their tax dollars is what funds, you know, their income tax or their property tax or whatever, they think it funds conservation, and it doesn't. So educate yourself, arm yourself with those, and be ready to, you know, educate the non-hunting public. And another thing I want you guys to go, if you're not already a member of, you know, Mule Deer Foundation, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, stuff like that, get involved. The Mule Deer Foundation is awesome. We just got back from the Hunt Expo. They do a lot of excellent stuff out there. Go to muledeer.org and become a member. If you're already a member, there's things on the website where you can look up and find other ways to get involved. If you're not a member, become a member. It's super easy. It's a tax write-off. It's helping the end goal. So get on their website, check out the Mule Deer Foundation, go check out Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Wild Sheep Foundation, all these organizations. Get involved as many as you possibly can. You know, I'm not saying if you can't afford it, we understand. Do what you can do. If you could put in some sweat equity, check on their websites and see if they have any programs for you to get involved. Thanks a lot, and let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild podcast, formerly Interviews with the Hunting Masters. And we are here at the Hunt Expo, and I got Nick Morton with us with Oz Cut Broadheads. Ah, see, you know what?
There you
go. I wanted to say Oz Cut because, and I was correct, I think I was corrected by somebody. I'm trying to remember who the hell that was.
It's 50-50. Some people get it right at first time, but you know. We got it now. It's all good.
All right. So, Oz Cut Broadheads. I stand corrected. And, well, that makes more sense because...
Oz, know, Australia.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
There
exactly.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I already had that connection. I figured that was what it was. But anyway. So, give us a little rundown about yourself before we get into the podcast.
Yeah, okay. So, basically, I'm a bow hunter from Australia. I've had Oz Cut Broadheads for the past 6 years, and we've sort of grown that into a larger business that it is now. But Basically, in a nutshell, man, I'm just a passionate bow hunter that loves bow hunting in all forms, all species, whatever it is. Any part of it, I'm about it, you know. So started off self-taught as a kid from about 10 years old, and it's just progressed and evolved into an absolute obsession that it is now, you know. So,
right.
Yeah.
You're one of the few guys I know that likes to shoot predators with his bow, like me.
Yeah.
You kill a bunch of fox, right?
So I guess as backtracking or going to the side a little bit, foxes are an invasive predator in Australia, kill a lot of our native mammals and things like that. So mm-hmm. they pose a massive environmental impact. So for one, it's doing our country a favour doing that, helping our natives. And two, whistling foxes for me is one of the most fun activities you can do with a bow, you know. I think last year, one day in May, which is a really good time of year for us to do it, I was able to call in 24 foxes in the one day, you
wow.
know. So we have some places that are absolutely inundated with them. And you can imagine the strain they put on the
right.
ecosystem.
Yeah.
But in saying that, awesome fun hunting them, you know.
Yeah.
Like getting them coming into the call, you're shooting them sub 10 yards, it's exciting. You're watching them come in. Like,
that's cool.
Yeah, massive fan of it.
Awesome. Yeah, I watched a couple of your videos a while back. And pretty, like I said, like nobody else does that out here. Like,
yeah.
Nobody hunts predators. I kill a lot of coyotes with a bow. And,
yeah.
And I saw that. I was like, oh, yo, man, I got to go try that out. And yeah. then I was like, then I had met you shortly thereafter because Sawyer had.
Yeah, through Sawyer Peacock. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh, yeah, that's the guy with the freaking fox.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. So let's. Well, real quick before we get into some, like, talking about actually hunting over there, tell me a little bit about your broadheads.
Okay, so I guess Ozcut was initially born out of necessity for myself. I wasn't happy with broadheads that were out there on the market. Back in the day in Australia, black stump broadheads was the broadhead that everyone used. They became harder to access and obtain, so a lot of Aussies turned to American broadheads. And essentially, I wasn't happy with what I was using and what I was finding, and it all came down to the straw that broke the camel's back one day. I took a shot that was textbook broadside, and I had this particular broadhead hit a rib. I got about 2 inches of penetration. The broadhead bent in half, fell out, and I lost the big bore. Mm. And it was from that point I was sort of like, I'm not happy with this. I can do better. I know what I need in a broadhead. I know what I want in a broadhead. And so I set about making that. And it was just for myself to use, you know
right.
what I mean? It was sort of filling a gap. That happened, and I guess progression from there, we went from a two-blade broadhead to a three-blade, started packaging them, and it was a bit of a side project, bit of a side hustle. It was pretty cool. And I sort of hit a point and went, you know what, I think I've got a good product here, I've got good people behind me, let's do something with it. And mm-hmm. I'd say the last 3 or 4 years we've really given it a push, and in the last 18 months we've gained a lot of traction, a lot of notoriety, and guys are gaining a lot of trust with the brand Ozcut, you know, like it's a broadhead that you can trust around
right.
the world, and everyone knows, yep, that will work, you know.
Yeah,
so
it's tough as shit.
Yeah, that's good. It. And the born out of necessity, it was, I made them because I wanted to use that. Like,
yeah.
that was my ideal. So I went out and made it.
Nice. And you just came out with a new style, and that's the Hurricane.
That's right. So, yeah, the Hurricane's a pretty innovative broadhead that we've come out with, in the fact that it's pretty hard to wrap your head around this if you're listening, but it is a single bevel, three blade broadhead with an offset blade. So similar to what your fletchings are on your arrow, that blade is offset from center. And what that's designed to do is once it hits the animal or flesh, it'll physically continue to rotate like it would through the air. And it will do a rotating sort of cut through the animal. And what that does, it opens up the wound channel a lot more than a conventional three blade will. So you're going to have bigger blood trails. The blood's harder to congeal, and essentially just kill them a lot quicker and cut more efficiently. So it's a simple change to a broadhead, but it's quite revolutionary when it's in effect.
Nice.
It sort of came to about 2 years ago, we were trying to, and this is my opinion of a single bevel, that a single bevel broadhead will encourage rotation,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't necessarily force it. If it hits something
right.
hard or whatever, it's going to lock up and stay straight. So we're sort of like, how do we get a broadhead that will twist and twist more? And a good buddy of mine, Paul Woods, who shoots a lot of big boars back home, he's like, hey, what if we do this and offset the blade? And I was like, you know what, that'd work. And we sort of conceptualized it, got some drawings done, got some prototypes made, and we started using them and were just blown away with the results. Like, noticeably bigger blood trails, quicker kills, and yeah, it just rolled from there. But it makes sense when you use it, you look at it, and you're like, simple, but it works, super effective, you know. So it's sort of put us on the map a little bit in the last 6 or 8 months since we've released it, and getting a lot of positive feedback with it. So
awesome. Yeah, I got to get my hands on a set. Play with them a little bit.
We can sort that out.
So a reason why I have you on today is actually talk about hunting in Australia, because you and I, we talked about it a couple times, just, you know, when we met up or whatever, but I'm seriously considering coming out, and I feel like there's a lot of guys out there that might be interested in going to hunt there too.
So, yeah, for sure.
Let's start off by, like, what are some of the different types of that game that you can hunt there?
Okay, so, like, a lot of guys think of Australia and they're going to think of buffalo and things like that in the top end, but myself and the region in which I live in has more of our bread and butter type hunting, which is goats, deer, pigs, foxes, that type of hunting in the mountains, you know. So,
right.
And that's what I've grown up doing. Hunting mountain boars in particular is my favorite. So what I would say, I'd call these your bread and butter species, very accessible, you know what I mean. If you're looking at those hunts up north for buffalo and things like that, you're sort of paying in the tens of thousands for those hunts.
Right.
Whereas these mountain hunts, I guess to backtrack, I'll just say, like, we're a very different hunting demographic to America in the fact that I would say 80% of our hunting opportunities is private land, mm-hmm. 20% is public, you know. We don't have the masses of public land that you guys have. It is there, but the bulk of the hunting, and this is in my state of New South Wales, is all through private access.
Right.
But in saying that as well, we don't have as many hunters, so it is a little bit easier in Australia for private access compared to America, and you're not paying the big dollars for it. So,
okay.
As an American, for you to come over, and look, with the advent of social media these days, I don't know an American hunter that wouldn't know an Australian that isn't keen to take them hunting. You know, like, I've invited so many guys over, and it was Sawyer Peacock and Ben that have come over with me last year, and Devin Leonard,
mm-hmm.
And I'd been begging them for about 4 years to come over, and they finally made the leap, and had a ball, you know. So yeah. What I would say to some Americans who have sort of got the idea on their mind or whatever is, like, there is so many Aussie guys that would be interested to show an American their backyard, I guess.
Right, right.
That just ask the question, say, hey, I'm thinking about this. Can you point me in the direction? Like, you're going to get more offers than you think, you know.
Right.
Like, I've offered you.
Yeah.
Come out. Tell me when you're ready. Get coming. On a plane.
I'm coming next season for sure.
You know, so.
It's already, I already got it planned in my head.
Yeah. So.
I just got to clear it with the
boss.
I just got to clear it with the boss over there. But, let me back up just a little bit.
Yeah.
You said there's deer. I know there's, you guys have sandbar deer.
We have 6 species of deer.
Okay.
So we have fallow deer, red deer, Roosa deer, Samba deer, Chittle or Axis deer, as you guys call them, and Hog deer.
Hog deer.
Hog deer. They're just a tiny little deer. They're sort of in a real small pocket down in the southern part of the country.
Okay, there we
go. They're the only deer that are basically on a tag system in a really regulated season because there's such a small population of them. That's probably why you haven't heard of them.
Okay.
In my area, the bread and butter of the deer species is your fallow and red deer. You know, that's what is most accessible. And down a little bit further south, Samba. Samba hunting, you have a lot of public land opportunities in the state of Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
You basically get a game license through the Game Management Authority, I believe it's called. And there's actually a lot of public land you can hunt for Samba deer in Victoria. So
okay.
that's a state south of me, but there is a lot of opportunities for those Samba there. But yeah, we have 6 deer species in the country.
That's awesome. How feasible is it to come there in a 10-day span and kill 3 different deer?
You'd be doing well. To hunt fallow and red deer, if you come over, on most blocks you'd be having opportunities on both.
Uh-huh.
So you could get yourself in front of those deer, whether you wanted to actually kill. Different
right.
story comes
right,
down
right,
to the
right,
hunt,
right.
you know. But like I'll revert to the hunt with Sawyer and Devin and Ben.
Mm-hmm.
We had those guys in front of fallow deer and red stags. And they were only here for 4 days and they all had opportunities on bucks and stags.
Nice.
You know, so... and obviously it comes down to the access that you've got. Some of our public land is a little bit tougher, but there is areas with those deer species there and that. Like, you're going to do your research and you can look at harvest reports on the public land and things like that, and you'll get an idea of where it's at. But what I would say is if guys are interested in coming over, there's Aussie guys out there that would be more than happy to show someone their backyard, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I know so many guys that offer, and very rarely we get taken up on that, you know?
It's because it seems like such a daunting... trip, you know. It's like, It's, what, 18 hours from here?
So typically from a flight from LA to Sydney is about 14-hour trip, you know.
14.
Yeah. Okay. But in saying that, look at the opposite. Like, we're a country with very little hunting regulations, seasons. We don't have tags. Except for hog deer, there's no such thing as tags in Australia. Seasons are very minimal. The regulation is just not there like America. So you take an Aussie who's grown up with sort of, you just go hunting, I guess. And you come over here and every state has different rules and regulations. And for me, it's a very daunting process because it I just don't have the knowledge on it, you know. So for me coming over here, I'm asking people as many questions, trying to get as much information as I can about the hunts and the laws and regulations and draws and applications. And that's a daunting process for me, you know.
Just to learn one state's hard enough, and then let alone
that's the right.
country.
You know, it's so rough. And our systems aren't that complex, so it's more of a license application. If you want to hunt the public land, you do an online quiz, I believe, and I don't want to say the wrong information here, but that's about the crux of it, you know. You pay a small fee. You're not paying hundreds of dollars at all. I think it's under $100. I could be wrong, but it's not expensive to do. It's not hard to obtain.
Okay. So you basically, you buy a license and it's good for everything. And it's good for the whole country or just for this one
state?
So
in New South Wales, in the particular area I'm at, they've just changed the regulations. You used to need a game license or a G license, they would call it, to hunt deer. They've now retracted that. You don't need a game license to hunt them. In Victoria, I believe, you need a license through the Game Management Authority. In Queensland, you don't need a license. So it varies by state, but more often than not, you don't need a license. But that's only for deer. Mm-hmm. The other the invasive species like pigs and goats and cats and foxes, there's no licensing requirements at all for that.
Really?
But if you're to hunt the public land, you need an R license in New South Wales just to allow you to hunt that public land. So,
okay.
But all those feral pests, it's basically free range. So we essentially want them wiped out, you know, within reason. So it's hard to say that, but they are a menace to our native environment, you know.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. Well, that's pretty cool. So what's, in your opinion, what's the best time to come for red deer?
So obviously if you wanted to come and hunt red deer in particular, our rut typically peaks around the last week of March, first week of April. That's generally prime time. But if I'm saying to someone, when is the best time to come over and do all-round bread and butter hunting, as I'm calling it, would be May. So with May, you're sort of on the tail end of the rut. You might see a little bit of deer rutting action. Great time to whistle in predators. Okay. Awesome time. May is the prime month. It's also cooling down and coming into our winter because we're in the southern hemisphere, so we're polar opposites to you guys. So it's cooling down a little bit so you can hunt all day in the mountains. And the pig hunting becomes a lot better because they become a lot more active throughout the day with those cooler temps. And you might see some pig rutting activity coming into then. So that's sort of a good all-round month to come over is May, you know.
Got it.
Yeah.
So, and fallow deer have a roar too, don't they?
Yeah, so they rut typically around the same time as red deer.
Okay.
Our Samba deer are a little bit more sporadic, and they're sort of June, July when they rut. They're not vocal animals or anything like that, but they're actively chasing the hinds around.
Got it.
Chittle deer, as such, are a little bit more sporadic as well in the fact that they can go at any time.
That's like here too. They're access deer. Depends on what state you go. Some of them don't have horns. Some of them do. Some of them.
That's right. It's all over. Typically, February though is the best to find hard antlered stags generally, but you're still going to see velvet stags at different times of year and rutting in bits and pieces. So.
Got it. Cool. So let's talk a little bit about actually hunting. Fallow deer, and we'll start with red stag. When you're when you're going after them, I know you and I talked about this a little bit, but you basically only do roars to locate.
Yeah, so we spoke about this the other day, didn't we? So and I was reverting this back to elk hunting, where I hunted Montana last season, the first time I've hunted elk in the rut. And we had bulls bugling with us and vocalizing a lot, and you could physically communicate with those bulls, and it wouldn't shut them down. You could get them talking to you.
Right.
Whereas my experience on red deer, and I'm talking sort of your bigger, older trophy stags here, they don't like to be spoken to by another deer within reason. Like, our hunting philosophy is we might let out some location roars just before daylight. Mm-hmm. When the deer are sort of talking and more active, and a red might respond, and we'll go, okay, he's in this gully or he's moving that way. Once daylight comes, even just a subtle like location or communal roar, I have found to the big stags will collect their hinds and take just simply take them out of the area, because in their mind they go, okay, there's another stag here. I don't even want to compete. I'm just going to leave. And that's what we found on those bigger animals, you know. Like, they're pretty smart. They don't want to have to interact with other stags that are there to take their ladies.
Right. He's already got the ladies. Why?
Yeah. Why let his presence known, you know?
Now, if it's a big bull, or we're not really, I guess stag. A stag.
Yeah.
A big stag that's, he's not with hinds yet.
Yep.
Do they tend to be a little bit more?
They are a little bit more responsive, yes. But even so, and I've only hunted elk in the rut once, so it's hard to compare.
Right.
But I would say they are harder to drag in. They'll come in very tentatively as a generalization. That's those right. older stags, you know, like younger spikers and sort of raghorn styles. Like, yeah, you can get them tearing in. But there was a couple of stags we hunted last year and 2 years ago, like, had no hinds, hind calling, and they were just like, no, you come to me. He would sort of let out a roar as if to say, I'm not coming to you, you come to me, you know. Right. So they're super challenging to hunt, those stags. I'd put them as harder than a big fallow buck, just for, they're sort of a bit more mysterious in their ways. They don't show themselves in daylight as much. They run under the moonlight a lot more, and they'll hold up in those tight gullies and push hinds into hell holes, basically, and hold them in there away from other deer and hunters, you know.
Gotcha.
Whereas a fallow, like, also like the old fallow bucks, they're pretty wise as well, you know, like, don't get me wrong, they're super switched on. But you'll often hear them grunting and vocalizing a lot more in daylight than a red.
Right.
And you'll see them in spots that a red deer generally wouldn't show himself as much. So for me, I like hunting the red deer more because of that sort of mystique with them, you know. And on the blocks that fallow and red deer intermingle with each other, a high number of fallow deer will eventually push the red deer away because they're more aggressive animals, and they'll push the red deer off the blocks.
I've heard that before.
Yeah. So on one of the blocks we hunt, it's sort of got a merging herd of fallow on there at the moment, and we're actually trying to shoot every fallow buck we see and doe just to keep the numbers down so we can hold the red deer population on there. Like, the fallow have sort of overrun the property surrounding, but we've got a bit of a stronghold of deer, so we're trying to sort of keep those fallow numbers down, you know, where we can to let the red deer thrive on there and feel safe.
Right.
So
is there, you may not know this answer because it's, you know, a statistic, but do you guys have, like, I guess, I don't know, would be the fish and game department or the natural resources, but do they have like an idea of how many stags they have on the state?
Or? I personally can't answer this correctly, but I'm going to assume no. We don't have those sort of resources available to us. Like, it's a shame because hunting is somewhat frowned upon in Australia by the general populace, and the government basically wants it not to exist. Like, we don't have access to the educational resources and materials that you guys have. Like, yes, we have a little bit of legislation and regulation around it, but I couldn't get an estimation of the count in the area we're in of stags to bucks or does to hinds and everything like that, you know.
Okay.
In Australia, how I see the government, that they want hunting to exist, but no one to know about it, within reason, you know. Like, it's definitely not celebrated like it is over here in America.
Right.
If someone was down the street
here or
back home, it's like, oh, you hunt. It's immediately negative connotations, you know. Where, like, an expo like this doesn't really exist back home.
No.
So you guys hunting is far more widely accepted than back home to Australia.
Yeah. I've talked to a lot of guys that are hunters in different countries, in Spain and, you know, Europe and even Canada, you know, and everybody says that they wish they can adopt the North American conservation model and hunting model into there, you know, because it works.
100%. 100%. It's proven and it works.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going to have animals there for generations to come. It's managed. It's
right.
It's perfect, you know. In saying that, we're different. Like, we have invasive species and numbers need to be managed and things like that. But a lot of time, the government's answer is put a chopper up and go shoot 10,000 animals.
Ish.
You know, like, that's an industry wasted.
Yeah.
Let hunters go in there. Let's get some sort of tag allocations. We'll pay for it.
The money you guys could generate.
You know, so it's very wasteful, and it's a shame to see when they go shoot X amount of thousand deer or camels or whatever. That seems to be our answer more than let's get a structured program in place and get it happening. It's, oh, we'll just cull them. you know. So, but there's hunters out there willing to pay money, struggling for access and things like that, that would gratefully go and do the job for them, pay them for it, and get a resource from it.
For sure. That actually happens here a little bit too. And it's these metropolitan programs, these like suburban deer.
Yeah.
Like for instance, in New York, on Staten Island, there's a shit ton of deer.
Okay.
Lots of whitetail there.
Yeah.
And the state of New York paid, I don't remember the numbers, but it was high. Let's say $5 million. They paid $5 million for biologists to go there and trap like 25% of the bucks. 25%, only 25%. I don't know. I think it was even less. And sterilize them.
Oh, really?
When you had a population of bow hunters that would have been super happy to pay money, and the success rate is like 30-something percent.
Oh, really?
From bow hunting. So you would have immediately taken care of the problem that you were trying to take care of, getting the, you know, the
and generate revenue whilst doing so.
But no, they spend $5 million. So that kind of crap happens here too. Yeah. But it's just not, it's not as bad. It's not, obviously.
And I think the problem with us is our hunting demographic is a lot smaller than you guys. Yeah. We don't have a large voice. We don't have the numbers behind us. And that's why that happens, you know. Like, Australia's got 25 million people in there. And the percentage of hunters in comparison to you guys is way smaller, you know. Yeah. So we don't have that voice or that demographic to sort of get those programs in place. And that's why that does happen. And it just sort of gets swept under the radar and it happens.
Makes sense.
So
switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about the hog hunting. What type, first off, is it like your barnyard looking pigs, or are we talking like Russian boar like type?
So you're speaking my language now. So I know what our wild boars are, I would say, is a cross in between the two. So
like a ridgeback.
Type, razorback looking. Yeah. And what I hunt in particular is what I'd call a mountain boar. They have a very distinct look. They have real big shoulders, a big high razorback, and sort of go pointy in the back end. Mm-hmm. There's no mistaking a big mountain boar when you see them. It's quite impressive. Yeah. But that, for me, is my favorite style of hunting. Hunting boars in the mountains. That's my jam. I love that style. Like, a lot of guys frown upon it and say, oh, yeah, it's just a pig, blah, blah, blah. But
to find
a big old mountain boar, to me, is I see more fallow bucks, more red stags shot every year than big, mature mountain boars.
Oh, yeah.
And I think a lot of people would agree. And in saying that, a lot of people don't chase them. But the boars are harder to find and locate because of their sporadic movements. They come out 5 minutes before the sun goes down. They're mostly nocturnal. You might get them out in daylight when a sow's in season. They move around very fast. Like, a lot of times, if you see a boar come out of an afternoon, he's physically trotting somewhere, and you're almost jogging behind to keep up, and you've got to do that quietly and try and get in range whilst he's moving faster than you can physically walk.
Right.
A lot of those factors just draw them, and the fact that they're super tough. I think boars are an animal that get lost a lot more when they hit marginally because they simply... they just do not stop. Like, you've got to hit them sweet to pull them up. If you do a marginal shot on a deer or something, it might run and bed down and you'll get a finisher in it. Big mountain boar, you hit him wrong, you're not going to see him again. Right. He's just going to go and go and go and go, and you're not going to find him, you know.
It's the same scenario here.
Yeah.
One of my number one hunting buddies, Charles Whitlam, he's a pig hunting machine.
I like him already.
In California, so he kind of hunts a lot of pigs there, and I've hunted boars with him there. And he's the same way like you. He's like, he would rather go shoot a big old mature boar than kill a, you know, 180-inch mule deer. Like, he's sick about it. But he's told me a lot about basically a lot of the same stuff you just said, you know. And I've witnessed it with him, too, like... I had a shot opportunity on one 2 years ago, and he was coming right at us, and he was on a mission, and he dropped into this little deal, and when he came out, he was just covered by some brush, so I couldn't get a shot, but he was just on a mission. Like, they catch a whiff of, like, a sow something, like, a mile away, and they're just going, you know?
And, like, it suits, I'm very aggressive with how I hunt. Like, I'll stalk in, and if I've got an opportunity, I'm going to take it there, and then, you know what I mean? Like, I stalk a lot faster than a lot of people. Obviously calculating what I do, but I'd call myself very aggressive in how I hunt. So that sort of goes hand in
hand
with those
language
things.
Now.
Yeah. So for me, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen fast and it's going to happen in under 20 yards. Like, I would say 75% of the pigs I shoot are sub 15 meters because
nice.
It's like you're cutting them off. There's a little depression. You might, I've got to get there. So he pops out in front of me and I'm at full draw. But I've shot countless pigs at under 5 meters in thick bracken fern and long grass when you just sort of rush up on them while the wind's good, get in there and make that shot count, you know. So
nice.
That just for me, everything about that is just, I love it, you know. Like, that's where my winters are spent. Winter's obviously the best time to hunt them because they're like us. Throughout the year, they're nocturnal pretty well. But when winter comes and those temperatures drop, they like to be, if it gets, I'll speak in Celsius here. I'll go in Fahrenheit for you guys. So I think if it gets below about 28 Fahrenheit, a pig will start to be less nocturnal. So they're going to get cold overnight below that. So they're going to stay in their beds overnight as opposed to going out and feeding. So when that happens, their hand is forced. They have to come out throughout the daytime. So you get, you might have them out for 4 hours during the day as opposed to 30 minutes throughout the summer and the fall and all that. So winter for me in those cold temperatures in the mountains, that's prime time for hunting boars. You might have them out 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon.
What style of hunting? Are you doing still hunting? Like, you walk in just stalking through the woods, or are you glassing looking for them?
I would say a combination of both.
Okay.
So I've got, of an afternoon, I will often sit off a ridge and watch because what I do is I sort of know my areas I hunt very intimately, and I'll see a lot of sign, footprints and digging and things like that, and I go, okay, a boar's frequenting here.
Mm-hmm.
What I'll do is I'll get off a vantage point and I'll glass of an afternoon because he's going to be coming out of an afternoon so I can spot him.
Right.
Whereas of a morning, they're traveling back into their bed. So if you're on a vantage point and you want to spot them, they're on the move back to their beds. You're not catching them.
Right.
Like 9 out of 10 times, you won't catch up with him. So of a morning, I'm walking their sort of bedding routes back to where they're going. I might catch them out on the edge of the timber feeding, but I'm sort of following them back up to where they're going.
Okay.
Whereas in an afternoon, I'm waiting for them to come to me. So it just matches their behavior, you know, and that's what I've learned.
No, that's good.
But another thing I'll do throughout the day is I'll put a shit ton of miles on the ground and I'll find where that sign is and I'll try and to learn as much just what I can see on the ground as to where they're frequenting. Like, I hunt with zero trail cameras. I probably should, but I don't. It's just sort of all instinctively I'm seeing sign. And if I'm seeing big prints frequenting an area, I'm like, okay, I'm going to spend some attention here.
Nice.
Okay, he must be coming here of an afternoon or coming through of a morning, whatever, and match my hunting with that. So I try and cover as much ground as I can throughout the day to sort of understand what they're doing overnight.
Right. No, it's a good way to do it. So in May, what kind of... What's the weather like?
So that's just coming into our fall, basically, for you guys. So mild temperatures.
Yeah.
We can have some warm days, but also mild days as well. Could have temps down to sort of like 40 degrees, 35. We get real cold weather. But it's just great hunting weather. You know, you can walk all day. It's not a problem. Animals are going to be out all day. It's one of my favorite months to hunt, you know. Everything's on the table, and that's in the mountains, obviously, that I'm talking. So,
and so the mountains, what kind of elevation are we talking about?
Feet-wise, I think up to about 5,500 feet, sort of out. 6,000 feet's our limit. One of the properties I hunt is very steep, and one of the higher elevations in the region, and I think it's about 6,000.
Okay.
So we don't have mountains of your guys' caliber. In saying that, they still are steep, big mountains as well, you know. But we don't have that starting elevation.
So, I mentioned hunting in California. California doesn't get over 2,000 feet, but everything's like this.
Yeah, correct.
You know.
So, it's all relative, you know. Like, exactly. It's steep as hell in places, you know.
And you're going from zero to 2,000.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, it could get pretty bad. No, but, no, that's good because, you know, 6,000 feet's manageable, you know.
Like, we get up there, like, it'll snow in winter a few times on the properties I hunt and things like that. So we do get those cold temperatures and sort of have that elevation, but it's not to the extent over here that if you're hunting in winter, you're in snow. Like, it sort of might snow for a week or two a year, things like that.
Right.
But, yeah, we're not on the level that you guys are at with the elevation and the temperatures. You guys seem to have a lot more extreme colds that we have.
Right.
But in our summer, it generally gets a lot hotter than you guys get.
Even hotter than Arizona?
Arizona, probably level. But that's sort of general, like, along our whole... country, I guess, you know what I mean?
Right, no, for sure. Just messing around. So during the roar, it's pretty hot as shit then.
It can be, yeah. So it's hard to pick, you know. Like, when we do, towards April, when we get those temperatures dropping, that's obviously when the rut picks up and the cooler temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
But if we get hot days in the rut, it does mess with you, as you know. Like, they're going to be vocal of a night only. They're going to shut down of a day. And in the last 3 years, for people that don't know, Australia's been pretty well drought-stricken. So the seasons have been very poor, and the animals have been in poor condition coming up into the rut. And a lot of times the hinds and does haven't been cycling, so the rut has been very average the past 2 years especially. Last year, the rut for the red deer basically didn't happen. We had a herd of 60 hinds on particular property we were hunting. Mm-hmm. We were checking them every day. Did not see a stag for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And whereas the year before, we would have seen 20 stags mm-hmm. coming in and checking them hinds. So that to me shows that there's not a hind in season in that, because like they had their hip bones sticking out. You could see their ribs. They were in really bad condition. Right. So whereas once we got some rain in May, they sort of done a little bit of a late rut. But the last 3 years has been very average rutting-wise, feed and condition right. for everything.
Is May your rainy season or no?
We don't really have a rainy season as okay. such. If you go towards the Northern Territory where the buffalo hunting is, around sort of November, December, January, February, that's our wet season. Mm-hmm. And then it builds up into the dry from then. But yeah, we do get storms, things like that, isolated over the summer. Well, our summer's January, February, along the coast. And we're actually getting a lot of rain at the moment, which is good. We're actually flooding at the moment. So we've gone from fires wow. to flooding. So one extreme to the other. But yeah, typically like May through to June are wetter months in the mountains as well. You get sort of that winter with the southerly coming in, getting rain squalls and all that coming through.
Nice. Nice. I'm excited, man.
You might have to see it one day for yourself.
I'm gonna.
I've offered this to a lot of people, you know, and there's only been three take me up on it so far on that trip.
I'm one of those guys that you don't invite me lightly, because I usually take people up on it.
It's not like it's awesome. We've got so much opportunity at our doorstep,
especially,
you know.
Especially since it's during a time of year that I'm not hunting anywhere else.
That's right. We've got polar opposites. Like myself, I'm hopefully planning on coming back over here sort of August through to October and sort of traveling around a few of the western states and doing hunting.
Yeah.
And then you'll come back from that, and then our season will be starting. So it's the best of both worlds when you can do it.
Oh, yeah.
It's really good. But I think you'd have a ball if you came over.
Oh, yeah. No, I know I would. I just gotta make it work. This year definitely can't do it because we're going red stag hunting in Argentina.
You get to do that anyway. So, yeah. But 2021, who knows what'll happen?
2020, I'm gonna make it happen.
That's what I said. You just shoot me a message and we can make it happen. Like, it's easy as you get to Australia, we go hunting pretty well. Like, it doesn't have many costs associated with it. Yeah, we can do it super easy. It's no deal.
Sweet. So why don't you tell our listeners where to find out about the Ozcut Broadheads?
Yeah, so if you check us out on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube, just Ozcut Broadheads, which is O-Z-C-U-T Broadheads. We've got a pretty cool YouTube channel. I think we've got over 100 videos on there, and social media, we're all over. And myself personally is Nick Morton, with 3 underscores at the end. So, and yeah, I'm bow hunting almost every week at the moment. So it's what I live for. It's what I'm passionate about, you know, and being at this expo is super cool. Like, we don't have anything like this in Australia. So to come over here every year and interact with everyone like-minded and on such scale, it's awesome to do and see, you know. Like, we wouldn't have had this conversation, no. you know, if we hadn't met over here. You know, I've got a lot of good friends over here I've met. Yeah, and just endless opportunities over here. So it's awesome to come over to this every year.
Awesome. Sweet. Well, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me on, John. It was awesome.
Yeah, I'm sure the listeners will enjoy that. And might have some phone calls for people. I don't know.
we'll recap this next year after you come to Australia and do a hunt, hey?
Yep, for sure.
Sounds good.
All right. Take it easy. Hey, guys. Want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand in hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.